Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1043. It's Monday, the 16th of April, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vasarion, that's VRS, and Neil discusses their purchase order from a major tyre producer for the company's proprietary Nanin Few Layer Graphene Nanoplatelets. Also on the podcast, I have Dr. Steve Staley, CEO of Upland Resources, that's UPL, and Steve talks about the memorandum of understanding it's entered into with a Sarawak state entity to jointly assess, explore for, and develop hydrocarbon assets. Also on the podcast, talking about hydrocarbon assets, oil and gas sector authority Malki talks about the following stocks. Are you ready? Amerisa Resources, AMER, SDX Energy, SDX, President Energy, PPC, Echo Energy, Echo, Trinity Exploration and Production, Trin, Range Resources, RRR, Ferro Petroleum, FPM, and Hurricane Energy, HUR. Plus, it's a Monday, so I have market analyst with Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talking about companies releasing updates this week, including JD Sports, MoneySupermarket.com, and Unilever. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs, too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vasarion. That's VRS ticket. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning. How are you, Justin?
Good, thanks. And like I tweeted earlier, churning out yet another significant bit of news. So it's a graphene supply to major tyre producer, and we'll go into the detail of that a bit. Before we do, Neil, for people listening who have not heard of the company, how do you explain it to them? Summarise, please.
Okay, so Vasarion formed 2011, and is an advanced materials company pioneering the next generation of materials, including graphene.
Yeah, and I say, you know, another sort of announcement, because you've had a lot, and I've almost lost, I can't keep up with it. So, I mean, so for people just listening now for the first time ever, just to sort of summarise, off the top of your head, just headline some of the contracts you've signed of late, or agreements.
So we've had a series of collaboration deals since about October last year, including one of the biggest clothing brands, one of the biggest aircraft manufacturers, one of the biggest aerospace suppliers. We've had a whole range of different sectors and different projects to be working on, including packaging. And, you know, it is a phenomenal time for us. And, you know, we're busy as hell. And I don't think anybody can ever appreciate exactly how many plates are spinning at any one time. Yeah. We obviously also announced that we've got this interest in China as well, which we're pursuing, as well as other geographical locations, including setting up a base in the US.
Yeah, it's got like a snowball effect, though. We've said this before, haven't we? The more you sign with these big companies, like you've done this global chemical major as well, global consumer goods company, and the more you do of these, the more you're likely to attract, aren't you?
Absolutely, and you know what we've been trying to do for the last couple of years is get a firm foundation in place so that we become the place to go to for this particular type of technology, and you know the proof's in the pudding, as they say, and we've still got more proof to go. We've still got huge testing programs. The guys are busy making materials, they're busy testing materials, they're busy working with customers. You know, I'm not, I've got to be honest, back at the factory, I'm not the most popular chap in the world because, you know, a few of the guys are saying enough's enough, Neil, but we've got an appetite for this and we want to get on with it. So
yeah.
There's going to be more of it.
Okay, well, let's, the news today is you've secured a purchase order for the company's proprietary Nanine Fuller graphene nanoplatelets from a leading tyre producer based in Europe. Now, I know you're active on Twitter, and I saw you a while back. I know you can't name the company, but I did see a picture there of you visiting. I'm not going to reveal who they are. People can look at your own Twitter feed and find out, because there's a picture there of you visiting a big tyre producer. So I'm assuming it's the same. Obviously, you can't say anything. But take us into this. So what are they... you've initially been providing 500 grams of Nanine for testing. So what do they hope will happen then, Neil?
Well, this is a milestone event for us. So, you know, you're quite right in joining the dots up. You know, we go and visit a customer like we did there. That starts a conversation going. Normally, there's multiple projects and multiple types of activities going on. Then, you know, unfortunately, we tend to get involved in legal teams and NDAs and agreements and all kinds of things. Obviously, this one's a little bit different, and it's a true milestone event in that it's one of our distributors that that we're working with, previously known as Lansdowne Chemicals, taken over by a big German company. And they've got a whole bank of customers that they can introduce our technology to, so it means that we can get going quicker and quicker and quicker. And in this particular case, it's resulted in this initial order, which is the start of probably the biggest program we've been involved in. It's all predicated on us having to prove ourselves, and we don't mind that at all. You know, we've got lots and lots of data. The reason that these big companies are coming to talk to us is that we've got these fantastic connections with Manchester and Cambridge to be able to answer all of their questions in a relatively short period of time and get moving.
Yeah, and so do you know how long this testing period will happen? Because you say, if successful, further orders would be expected. Do you know how long it'll take for this testing to complete?
Well, we're in the doing phase now. So we've gone through the honeymoon period of the initial conversations with the technical teams. We've gone through the relatively boring stage of getting all the paperwork in place. And now we're in the doing stage, which is making materials. You know, we went back into the market just before Christmas to talk about scaling up. This is why we needed that money. This is why we needed to buy the kit. This, you know, we've got to ramp up the production. So, you know, part of my job now, and the reason I took a week off last week, is to refocus into actually, we've got to get the material out for these guys now. So what's the production team doing? You know, the sales team's busy getting more and more inquiries and stuff, and now it's the production team that's got to catch up. And as I said to you before, I'm not the most popular chap in the world, I'm sure. Mm. There's a few people in the factory that would prefer that we weren't going as quick as we are at the moment, but it's the game we're in, and we're not going to stop. So we've strengthened the team, we brought more people in, and it's about getting enough material now to be able to satisfy these customers. These are massive inquiries, Justin. You know, this is a massive company, and it's kind of like David and Goliath, really. But it shows the strength of our product that these people are taking us seriously, and despite all the competition that everybody always writes about. You know, you don't get to talk to these guys. You don't even get to have a conversation with these guys unless you've got some kind of credibility, and we've got that by the bag now.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I mean, so what are they hoping, Nanny? I mean, tyre-wise, what does it make tyres lighter, stronger? What happens with it?
There's a whole range of different stuff. What we've got is we've got some test data about how graphene works in rubbers and elastomers now. We haven't talked about it previously. We've got that test data. We've been sat on it for a while. We've just been looking for the right customer to be able to exploit exactly what graphene does in that environment. And there's a whole range of benefits that come as part of that, not least making the process by which they manufacture tyres considerably easier to do. And that's a biggie if you're into them. If you're into them, into the business of making tyres, and someone can come along and give you some massive suggestions about how you can improve, then it's open ears. And obviously the world is changing, where everyone is looking to improve everything they're doing. They're looking to get better benefits out of all the products that they're manufacturing. And graphene enables that in every application that we talk to.
Yeah, excellent stuff. So, and as far as all the other things that are going on, the collaborations you've signed and the graphene sort of park in China, how is that coming along? Is it all going proceeding?
It's just there are a lot of plates spinning, and I took a bit of flak last week for taking a couple of days off. But
who gave you flak for that?
It was being labelled as holiday gate on Twitter, but the fact of the matter is, I needed some downtime, Justin, and I've come back, you know, fully refreshed, and I've got a long day, you know, 16-hour day in London today, and we've got a lot of plates spinning, so. You know, it's not as if we're taking it easy. So
yeah, and just to put it in perspective, I'm just looking at Wikipedia here, and if it is, you know, Continental, I mean, their revenue in 2017 was €44.5 billion. So it's quite a big company there. So
you got to understand, Justin, that we didn't float this business till 2013, and so, you know, less than 5 years ago, we're dealing with some of the largest companies in the world now, and I think that is a phenomenal success.
Yeah, they have 235,000 employees. Wow,
it's staggering, isn't it? I mean,
yeah,
you have to understand that. You know, their sites are like small cities, you know, and, you know, part of our experience, part of our background is in that game. So we're not frightened by it by any stretch of the imagination, but there is a disparity between, you know, obviously our company and their company. But what a great validation of what we're doing, that that big company with their 235,000 employees is interested in this little company that started in the Forest of Dean in Gloucestershire and, you know, has bloomed into this sort of, there's great opportunity for everybody.
Yeah, I think it's a great validation of you as a person when you're often asked lots of stuff on Twitter. You said people on Twitter knocking you for taking some time off, because you I've seen you deal with some right idiots on Twitter, and you're so polite all the time, and I've never known anyone you know, be as accommodating as you on Twitter. So fair play. I mean, if you want to have a chat to Neil, you can just do it on Twitter and he'll do it, and fair play. So Neil, if someone's listening right now and likes the sound of this story but are not yet following it, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
So the first one is that we're now able to validate that we have something that is out there into this big market. So the available size of the market is huge, and therefore the opportunity is huge. The second thing is that you know, we're growing very quickly, and that this the amount of good news stories coming is increasing. And the third thing is that, you know, I'm still the biggest shareholder in this, so my views and my strategy is very much aligned with those of the other private investors, institutional investors.
Yeah, and you know, the graphene story is still very much in its infancy, and I mean, for years, I think it was a piece in the Times this morning about it, saying it's starting to come real now, or, you know, because it's been 14 years, but it still has a long way to go, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was only really started to being used in sort of 2012, 2013, so a lot of research work. So, you know, it's still only 4 or 5 years in, and the opportunities that we're seeing across, you know, multiple sectors and multiple opportunities is huge.
Marvelous stuff, Neil. Thanks for chatting. And like I said, you're always releasing, you know, bits, collaborations, agreements and contracts. So no doubt we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Steve Staley, CEO of Upland Resources. That's UPL ticker. Steve, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure. Thank you, Justin.
Some big news today, and we've been chatting about this sort of, you know, you've been working sort of in the Far East out there for a long time. We've seen photographs of you with the guys from Sarawak. And finally, today, there's a MOU dropped there with a, you know, a memorandum of understanding for people about this project you've been working on for a long time. We'll get into the details of that in a bit. Before we do, Steve, for people not aware of Upland Resources, can you summarise the business for them, please?
Yes. We are an oil and gas exploration and production company. We are listed as a standard listing on the main market, London Stock Exchange. At the moment, we have assets in the UK. We are focused on three areas, geographical areas, UK, the Far East, specifically Malaysia, and also parts of North Africa.
Okay, and you've mentioned that before, and so discussions are sort of ongoing in North Africa, and we haven't got the detail of that yet. But okay, so let's talk about the news out today. It's a big bit of news, and you've signed a memorandum of understanding in Sarawak. Can you explain the significance of this? I mean, I did, when you mentioned, when I saw that picture a long time back with you and meeting with the guys from Sarawak, I did look up Sarawak, because I didn't know anything about it, essentially. And it was quite surprising what I found. But take us through the memorandum of understanding, please, if you could.
Yeah, well, let me sort of step back a little bit and say a little bit about Sarawak, first of all. I mean, it's one of the states of Malaysia. It sits on the island of Borneo. And it's had a significant oil industry since 1910. It stretches back well before that, in fact. But Shell made the first big discovery there in 1910. And really, that was one of the foundations of what is now Shell. So it's a very hydrocarbon-prone area. Most of the activity is offshore at the moment, but there's still quite a bit onshore. It's became part of Malaysia in the 1960s when Malaysia was formed, but it retains its own distinct characteristics. And what we're seeing there now is a sort of growing desire for autonomy in oil and gas from Sarawak. They've recently set up a company, a state-owned company called Petroleum Sarawak, Petros for short, and that is wholly owned by the government of Sarawak, and to encourage the development of all things oil and gas in that state. And it's really against that background that we've entered into this memorandum of understanding with Brook. Brook are a very interesting company. Brook Dockyard and Engineering Works. They've been in existence since 1912. A very well-established company and a lot of experience in the oil and gas industry. There we have very complementary skills. So Upland bring the upstream technical subsurface experience, if you like, geology, geophysics, and Brook brings the above surface engineering skills. And plus, of course, they have a lot of experience in Sarawak and extremely good contacts. And we've been, prior to signing this MOU, we've been working together for some time looking at opportunities in Sarawak. And so I'm very pleased to be able to make this announcement today. And I know the investors have shown a lot of patience in waiting for this, and I thank them for that. And I hope that this is the start of more news out of Sarawak for them.
Yeah, well, I think it's testament to the connections you have there, because, like you say, this you tried to explain the sort of political sort of makeup of Sarawak, and you sort of likened it to Scotland in the North Sea. You know, they've got a lot of oil there, but all of the country sort of benefits from that. And you said, and Sarawak is a bit like that, but this is the first public-private collaboration with a Sarawakan entity, and that's quite special, that isn't it, really?
I'm not sure if it's the only public-private collaboration, but certainly in the upstream oil sector, mm-hmm. We believe this is, it is fairly unique, and that we've been given this opportunity to work with what is really, apart from Petros, the newly established oil and gas company, the only upstream Sarawakian government entity. And so, we're in a good position to do well for Upland, but also for Sarawak.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I did look into it. I know you can't say exactly what you're doing. You haven't started sort of work there, exploring, whatever. But I read through some notes and stuff, and this is according to the Malaysian Energy Information Hub. That state, just that state alone, accounts for half of the country's proven natural gas reserves and possesses around 30% of the known 5.85 billion barrels of oil reserves. And it's estimated Sarawak's waters along the Sabahs also contain most of the undiscovered reserves of the country. So it's the potential is huge there, isn't it?
It is. And, as you rightly say, I can't give any details of what we've been looking at, but I can only say that we're encouraged. And, we hope in the fullness of time to be able to say some more. And, So yeah, but no, we're very happy about this, and it's a good day today.
Yeah, yeah, and one final thing which is quite interesting is you mentioned Shell, and they sort of started there, but there's a guy in January 2015, Ian Lowe, I think, the chairman of Shell Malaysia, said, up until 3 or 4 years ago, the prospect of finding new oil discoveries in Malaysia appeared limited, but the discoveries in the past 12 months, particularly in Sarawak, indicate that there may still be a lot more discoveries out there. And that's coming from Shell, so that's, and for him to say a lot more discoveries, that means it must be quite significant to move the needle of a company like, you know, Shell, you know?
I would not disagree with him.
Okay, well, let's draw. The news we didn't chat about, you released a while back, and there was some mixed reaction to it, was the convertible loan notes. Could you take us through that? And, you know, I think this was a loan note with a difference, because I think it depends on who is the, you know, the issuer and all that stuff. But take us through that, Steve, if you could.
Yeah. Yes, we did. This is going back about a month. We issued convertible loan notes for £3.5 million, which the reason for that is to give us some flexibility in our funding. We're well cashed up at the moment anyway, but this gives us added flexibility to do other things. And I think, yes, the difference between perhaps some of loan note facilities that you see out there for smaller companies like us is that we went to our as providers of these loans to existing major shareholders, and that includes Tune Assets, who this is Tony Fernandez's company, who invested £1 million in cash in us earlier in the year, and also our chairman, Norsa Zakaria, and our brokers. So these are not external third party entities who are just looking to turn things over quickly. These are investors with a vested interest, as it were. And the way we've structured it is that, it's interest-free, but there is a 3% upfront fee that's paid, and it's at Upland's choice, our option, as to whether we pay these fees, these upfront fees in cash or shares or a mixture. And indeed, if we do draw down any of these loans, it's also up to Upland how much and when. And when we repay it, whether we repay it in cash or shares or a mixture. So it's very flexible. We believe it's on very good terms. And, our share price went up when we announced it. So hopefully the market saw that as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's very important, you know, who's, holds the loan note. Two final questions. The first one is about Sarawak. So how fast will this move ahead now, Steve? Because I know it's been a while in the making here, but how fast will this move ahead, do you think?
I can't give you exact timescales for that, but suffice to say we've gone a fair way through processes of looking at and assessing assets. So we're not starting from scratch. We are still, I believe, several months away from acquiring an asset. I can't give you an exact number because it would depend on negotiations, governments, and third parties. So that's always a difficult one to be able to give exact numbers on, exact timings on. But just to say that we will move as fast as we can.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. And one final question. You mentioned North Africa. I don't know what you can say on that, but everything's still going to plan?
Very much so. I can't say a lot at the moment, but yes, they're very much going to plan. And I hope to be able to say some more on that in the near future. I would suspect, possibly before we say anything further on Sarawakian assets. But, you know, don't hold me to that.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, Steve, listen, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of what you're talking about, but are not following the story yet, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, well, I think first of all, we're in a very robust financial position, with cash in the bank, but also with the loan note facility there as well. In terms of near-term news, we've got the Wick well, which will spud in quarter three this year. That's an exciting well. We believe there could be a quarter of a billion barrels in place there. So this is high impact for us. We have 40% of of that permit, or will have when we have final OGA approval. And thirdly, of course, we're seeing now things really moving forward in Sarawak. And there will be more news to come out, I hope, on all of these as we move forward.
Marvellous stuff, and you could always add there, Steve, that you have got skin in the game, which I know people like that as shareholders. I did a survey recently, and 93% of people who took part in the survey, quite a lot in it, 24-hour period, said they would think twice about investing in a company where the management didn't have skin in the game. I know your guys, and you do have a lot of skin in the game, so that's always worth mentioning.
We do indeed.
Yeah, exactly. Steve, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Oil and Gas Sector Authority, Malky. You all right, fella?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Justin. And you?
Yes, I'm good. And I said, just before we came on and hit record here, I said, please tell me you're going to mention Amerisur, because I've had a couple of people saying, is Malky on today? Is he talking about Amerisur? And you've covered them in the past, and they've had results out, so I see no reason why. But please confirm you are, Malky, yeah?
I most certainly are, because they've had figures this morning.
Yeah,
I've already had a chance to speak to the finance director, Nick Harrison, so I can give you chapter and verse on Amerisur.
Go for it then. So, the news out today is it final results, is it, I think?
Yeah, final results today, and every way you look at them, they're they're very strong indeed. I mean, they've got revenue of... $92 million dollars, that is up 96%. I mean, don't forget, production is in good nick. They even with a few workovers and so on, they hit the 7,000 barrels a day at the end of the year. Oil prices are obviously very strong. I mean, give you a very rough idea, at $60, their cash costs and the costs are below, a bit below 20, so they've got an absolute clear $40 a barrel. Completely clean netback, cash netback, and it's a bit more than that, because it's they're getting a bit more than $60 at the moment. So you only have to do the sum: 7,000 barrels times 40 of profit. But in terms of where they're looking, obviously it gives them strong cash flow. They've got cash of it was nearly $40 million at the end of the year. They've got a deal with, they're continuing the deal with the OBA pipeline to Ecuador, and the Carrizo pumping station is all signed and sealed now. So effectively, whatever they produce, they can put through the pumping station. They've got a deal with Shell, which really replaces their RBL, their reserve-based lending situation, because they had an expensive RBL which they weren't using. If they cut a deal with Shell, effectively, what they're doing is, with the non-CPO5 product, it's effectively them giving them the money up front for the crude. So it's good every which way, at very, very modest costs.
Yeah,
it's a sort of prepay agreement, you might say.
Well, I've been I've worked out sort of 7,000 barrels a day, $40 profit over 300 days. That's $84 million profit. So that's a heck of a lot, isn't it?
It'll be more than that, because of course at the moment they're in the beginning of a sort of 16 to 18 well program, and they've got three of the most exciting wells coming up in the next quarter as well. They're drilling the the end sands at Platanilla, which is a three-well back-to-back program. And if that was a success, that is another new field for them, effectively. Mm-hmm. They're drilling the Mira Paliba well on Put 9. And, of course, they're drilling another well up on CPO-5, the Indico-1 well. So, there's a huge amount of excitement coming in there. And I would have thought that... there's a good chance of success in all or part of that program. The everything is going well. The CPO-5, where the first well there was a great success, that's operated by ONGC. Historically, ONGC might have bid, might have wanted to buy Amerisur out of that. And I don't think nowadays that Amerisur will be so keen. I asked the CFO, and he said, well, only if it was an absolutely stunning offer, I would say, you know, we're not sellers of that nowadays because, first of all, we don't need to. Secondly, we think it's very exciting. So yeah. One way or another, the outlook for Ameriserra is very strong indeed, and yet the shares have not participated in some of the rally that's happened. I know that quite a lot of the stocks haven't. So,
well, sometimes I think people, you know, look at the final results, and even if you see a turnaround, it's worth always paying attention to, you know, post-period results, because, you know, we are looking at historical figures here. But even though they've gone from a loss of like 29 million last year at the end of 2016 up to December this year, 31st December, which is now $630,000 profit, it's very much a turnaround story now. So the oil price is up, like I said, they're firing on all four cylinders, or they're ramping up to that. So I think this time, you know, these results next year will be a lot different again, won't they? More positive.
Absolutely.
You know?
And I mean, as you can say, they're turning over the money very nicely indeed now, and they've got their costs down again. So, you know, it looks good in every which way. So, Marvelous. You know, absolute, you know, stonking set of results, very encouraging. As I say, with that OPEX falling to below $20 a barrel.
Yeah,
it's very strong, and they've got lots of cash. They're, you know, everything is funded from here. So,
yeah, okay, cool. That's AMER. What else is you looking at, Malcolm?
Well, you would have noticed that SDX, one of your old favourites, there, Paul Welch, had another big discovery last week between the times that we've spoken in Egypt, Ibn Unus, in the South Dassouk license in Egypt. This was. They were expecting to find gas here, but it was way better than they expected. I think on the well was, you know, came in on prognosis, but the reservoir section they took was better quality and thicker than they expected, and certainly better than pre-drill estimates. So, you know, that's great news for South Dassouk. It'll take a little while, not long, to connect to the SD1X production. So the second half of this year, they will have production. South Dassouk is proving to be a highly attractive license, and certainly significantly bigger than they thought. So Egypt is going well, and they're getting money in as well, which is very positive. A lot of people think they're not getting paid in Egypt, but they certainly are. And of course, the Morocco, you know, last year.
You say that. I mean, because there must be at the moment. You know, SDX have come up with excellent news after excellent news. You know, very good news,
yeah.
And they've been progressing their program there very well. But the share price is not doing a lot. It's not reflecting. I think, is it because there's some? I mean, sometimes it does take a while for the share price to catch up, because it had a big rise, obviously, end of last year or 2016-17. But I mean, is that what some people, rumors are saying, they're not getting paid? Is that the issue there, or what?
Well, historically that was the case, because that was the problem, that one of the problems that Circle got into in Morocco and Egypt and so on. And, you know, there have been a number of companies in Egypt who have got large receivables, and they're not getting paid because, you know, they don't get paid in dollars, they get paid in Egyptian pounds. SGX have worked this out and are getting paid properly and in full, and they're getting their back payments. So once people work that out, I mean, yeah, SGX is another company, as you quite rightly say, that's a significant discount, especially having had these discoveries. And in, you know, last year we spent a lot of time talking about Morocco. And they took analysts out there in January, and we were all very impressed. But now we're getting back to Egypt, and things are going well in Egypt as well. So, you know, there's a possibility they might make another acquisition, but, you know, Paul's a smart guy. He'll only make something which makes sense for the company. They've got very supportive shareholders who want to put more money in if need be. They're fully financed for everything they're doing at the moment. They're having continued success with the drill bit. You know, to be honest, what's not to like about this stock?
Marvellous stuff. Okay, what's next, Malky?
President Energy this morning have announced, I mean, this thing goes from strength to strength as well, and it's only sitting on 10p, which is where the raise was done last summer, last autumn. They've announced a new workover program this morning, and a drilling program which is, you know, substantially ahead of and bigger than expectations. they're kicking on so well with the acquisition that they made from Chevron, and they're doing, you know, something 6 to 8 workovers. Each of those workovers is going to be bringing on something like 2 productive zones in each. Well, which was identified when they were doing the last drilling. They've got new wells coming on at Puerto Flores, which will bring higher production and, of course, addition to reserves. You know, they're spending $12 million, which is all coming out of existing cash flow, because production is up and the cash flow is up, and they're getting, you know, more than $60 a barrel for their stuff now, which is incredibly good news. And so, you know, everything that they're looking at with the testing at Estancia Vieja, Puerto Flores, is all doing very well. Another one with a strong balance sheet, good production, very profitable, and in very good nick. So, again, yeah, this share is significantly undervalued.
That's PPC. I always find it hard to think what the ticker is of that. But yeah, Presence Energy.
Absolutely.
Anything else there, Marky?
Well, yes, I'm afraid so. There's you would have noticed that on Friday, Echo Energy announced that with their very first workover in Argentina, they got gas to surface. Fracking or anything like that, straightforward gas to surface, which is extraordinarily good news, because they've only just started on Fraction D, where they're doing three workovers back to back. So the first one, they haven't even got the test unit on site yet. It came good so quickly. So that's incredibly good news for Echo, and the shares, you would have seen, rose quite sharply on Friday.
Yeah.
But it's very easy to mobilise these on land rigs in that part of the world. So the rig has already mobilised to the second workover prospect, and then they're getting about another 8 to 10 days. They'll have the test unit on the first one. So, you know, let's see what happens with the next one. But if they get 2 or 3 decent gas discoveries on their first go, then Echo will really be off to the races, because it's a very strong position, because they've got a good drilling prospect. Apart from doing the 3 wells on Fraction D, which are workovers, they've got a 4-well exploration program starting in May on Fraction C, there's no doubt that this one, which is quite a new kid on the block, but it's well financed, it's very well run, management is very strong indeed, and I think that there's a significant upside at Echo. It's in the bucket list.
Yeah, I see. I mean, it rose from a gapped up on Friday, closed at 13.66 on the Thursday, and then opened at 14.5 pence, so gapped up a little bit there, and it's risen again today, so it's looking quite bullish at the moment. What's next, Malky?
Trinity Exploration Production. You know, this is one of my favourites. We're back to Trinidad here, and Trinity is a very, very strong business indeed, having come out of a very difficult time sort of 2 or 3 years ago, but in as strong position as anybody. They've got the production was in line in the, this is the first quarter update this morning, production is in line. They had an expected change in the recompletions in that period, and of course it took in Easter weekend. So they've got cash of $12.5 million, which is going better. They're paying down the debt to the two, the finance and the energy ministry in Trinity, ahead of expectations, ahead of schedule, shall I say. This is one of the strongest, the biggest margin plays in the area. They're continuing the recompletions, the reactivations, the workovers, but more importantly, they've got their first two wells. They're drilling their first two wells for the first time, for some time, and that will bring in the cash flow that they want to in production. and there's a lot of upside from this drilling that they're doing right now. I would expect to see the whole process here for, as I say, one of the highest margin businesses that I look at, very, very strong management, they've cut costs out of all recognition in the last two or three years and still managed to run the business, so the margins are high. It's going very well at Trinity, and I've got well into the 30s P as my target price, and I think there's a lot of upside for this one.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Marvellous. And any more? Carry on, Mark.
Very briefly. I mean, staying in Trinidad, Range Resources, which are completely changing their spots over the last couple of years, where they needed to, with a new Chinese management. You remember, I went to visit them. They settled their Colombia position, announced that at the end of last week. This is another old-fashioned, old legacy problem dealt with. They'd had various problems in Colombia in their consortium and arguing with the state oil company. That's all behind them now. And as we know, since my visit, things are looking good for them in Trinidad. Range is recuperating nicely. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Quick mention of Faro, where they had a success on their Fagelberg appraisal well last week. Things again going from strength to strength for Faro, and of course they've got this DNO, unwanted sort of suitor in the corner. Finally, we mentioned Hurricane last time, and they put out a statement saying that everything was going according to plan. I think that they're very much on target for all the kit being delivered, and that the FPSO should be sailing away from the Dubai dry dock in the third quarter of this year. Now, it just so happens that I'm off to the Middle East tomorrow morning.
Nice.
Spending the rest of the week in Kuwait and then Dubai, and I will be visiting the dry dock in Dubai. So, if I get a chance, I'll get the binoculars out and see how the
how dry it is.
Yeah.
Okay, marvellous. It's probably very dry there actually this time of year. Cool. Make sure you take some sun cream there, and a nice big hat there, Marky.
I think I'm going to need to do that. Yeah.
Marvellous. Thanks for that, fella. And I assume, is that it?
Yeah, I don't think we can say very much more. I'll touch on things. I've had a much more uplifting conversation with Gunnell and Gulf Keystone, which are both quite interesting stocks from the retail side of it in the last few days. So I'm hoping to meet up with them when I get back from the Middle East. And, I think those two stocks are both getting back on the map. So, both ones for the notebook, as they say.
Marvellous stuff, Marky. Thanks for that. And we'll chat next week, fella.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is market analyst with Spreadex, is Connor Campbell. You all right, Connor?
Very good, thank you.
Now, to explain, you are talking about companies that are revealing results this week or releasing, and they tend to be at the bigger end of the market cap spectrum. So who are we starting with, Connor?
We've got JD Sports. Their full year figures come out on Tuesday.
Sorry, I'm sneezing.
Their figures this year have been very strong, but their market performance has been a bit choppier. I think in January it revealed that like-for-like sales growth had sort of held around the 3% mark in the second half of its financial year, and it also upgraded its pre-tax profit guidance, I think, for the second time in 4 months, saying that it now expected it to be around the £300 million mark, which I think would be a 26% increase year on year. So very, very healthy figures, especially that pre-tax profit guidance. I think it shot up on that note. In March, then, it announced, I think in something far more significant, announced that it was buying Trainer Supplier, the Finish Line, I think for £400 million. Interestingly, that company would have been 10% owned by Sports Direct. Obviously, he was a sort of bitter rival of JD Sports. And the most notable aspect of the deal, which I think the JD Sports has described as transformational, is that the Finish Line is the exclusive retailer, I think both in-store and online, for Macy's in the US. as well as having 550 stores in the US of its own. So it's a fairly substantial entry point for JD Sports into the US market with a company that already has a fairly firm base in, you know, one of the biggest chain stores in America. So I think, again, really ambitious plans there from JD Sports. I think investors are going to want to hear more about on Tuesday. I guess in terms of those figures, for your figures on Tuesday, it needs to just hit that £300 mark. Obviously, ideally, it will go a bit over that. But as long as it hits that £300 pre-tax profit mark, there's no reason why it can't, you know, rise, you know, back towards, say, 360 and above, given that in the last week and a half, 2 weeks, it's fallen quite sharply.
Mm-hmm.
So there is room for growth after its full-year figures on Tuesday, especially if it meets that pre-tax profit target.
Yeah. It's been bouncing off that £3.20 level, which has been odd. It's been almost it's between £3.20 and £4 is the range, you know, for the last sort of almost a year now. So it'll be easy, you know, interesting to see where it goes from there. Either it goes below that range or above it. But marvelous stuff. It's not a good time, is it? I mean, you've got to be strong bricks and mortar retailers to survive in this day and age, because there's so many going through at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah. It does seem to be of that sort of ilk. It does seem to be doing quite well, given that it is, you know, predominantly bricks and mortar. I think its online sales, you know, have improved in the last few years and stuff, but it is still predominantly a bricks and mortar place. I guess maybe stuff like, because it does shoes, you know, a lot of its products would be shoes. That's one of those things that people like to try on and stuff, so that perhaps protects it. And I guess clothing and stuff like that as well. Obviously, you know, stuff like that, like ASOS are huge. There is still going to be a contingent of customers that like to try things on first, so that perhaps protects it. But then, you know, you look at somewhere like Sports Direct, which has struggled. I guess JD Sports has also benefited from that at the same time.
Yeah, okay. Anything else? Who else is reporting it, Carl?
Yeah, we've got moneysupermarket.com. Their first quarter figures are on Wednesday. It's sort of, 2017 was a fairly good year for moneysupermarket.com, and then I think by the start of 2018, like within the first week of January, it was trading at a two-year high. Mm-hmm. But then since then, things have sort of gone very, very wrong. And then by the start of March, it was at a 20-month low. So it's been a fairly swift turnaround there. I think the main problem was its full-year figures in February. I think revenue was up 4% to just shy of £330 million, which is sort of fine, but a bit soft. I think the main weakness coming from its home services division, where revenue was down 22%, I think due to significantly lower number of customers using its collective switch service, which is where it switches, I think it negotiates a new monthly tariff for both your gas and electric bills. And there's been a sharp drop off in people taking up that offer. I think the main issue, however, was that its forecast for 2018, I think its earnings for 2018 are expected to be broadly flat before resuming growth in 2019, as it incurs sort of transitional costs of the CEO's sort of new strategy rejig. I think they're intending to, you know, continue to implement its sort of new technological platform, optimize customer journeys on the site, allow customers to sort of personalize their experience of the site, and expand more fully into the mortgage price comparison offerings, because I think at the moment they offer a fairly limited service there. But that, even though it's sort of got all those costs to incur, that hasn't stopped it, I think, from buying Decision Tech for £40 million, mm-hmm. which I think Decision Tech owns broadbandchoices.co.uk, which is another like price comparison site, and has I think a fairly substantial B2B service, which I think the moneysupermarket.com are intending to use that service to, I think it wants to help people sort of view the site on site, view moneysupermarket.com's offerings on sites they regularly are using anyway, to try and implement its sort of price comparison services on other sites. So in terms of its first quarter figures, I guess the main issue is going to be investors are going to want to see some, in terms of things that can improve, if you accept that earnings are going to be flat for 2018. Mm-hmm. I think investors are going to see some improvement in the home services division, given that it saw that really nasty 22% decline across the year. Even if it could get that down below a 20% decline in sales, that could help. In terms of our clients, it's fairly mixed around moneysupermarket.com. I think they're not quite sure what way it's going to go yet, as I think it's sort of been trading fairly laterally around between, I guess, like 280 and 285 for the last month or so. I think it's a toss-up really what way it could go. I'd say our clients are erring on buying around the 280 mark, but like I said, it's fairly mixed.
Yeah. Look, it did drop off a cliff, didn't it? And I like to see things settle. It's calmed down a little bit, It's spiked down to £2.40. It's that day it gapped down there from, what was that? 21st of the 2nd, February. So it gapped down at 327. And the next day, it opened up at 283, which is not nice. Never nice little shareholder. But it's been levelling out about 280. But yeah, these figures will present a bit of clarity. Anything else, Connor?
Yeah, finally, we've got Unilever. They're reporting their first quarter figures on Thursday. And actually, Unilever had a really strong 2017. I think it was up 25% by the end of the year. However, it did begin to lose momentum, I guess, in the final quarter of the year. I think by the start of October, it was at all-time highs, but then pulled back, lost around £4 in the final quarter of the year, and that sort of negative momentum has continued into 2018. Sort of repeatedly tested £37, which is sort of its lowest price in 13 months, something like that. Basically, its lowest price since that Kraft Heinz bid back at the start of 2017. However, I think recently it sort of shot back up a bit thanks to a buy rating from UBS. In terms of its figures, I think its full-year figures in February were pretty good. Turnover, excluding the now-sold spreads business, was up 2.2% to €50.7 billion. Underlying sales growth, again without the spreads business, was up to 3.5%, which is the target Unilever had set after, It set a bunch of targets after it rejected the Kraft Heinz offer to sort of satisfy investors, and the 3.5% underlying sales growth was the target there. I think that had also accelerated in the fourth quarter. I think within the fourth quarter, underlying sales growth was up 4.3%. Elsewhere, underlying operating margin was up 110 basis points to 17.5%. Pre-tax profit was up 9% to €8.1 billion. So, healthy figures across there. Obviously, you've also had since then news that it's going to move its base from London to Rotterdam, so I think investors are going to want some further update on that, especially what that will mean for the company's sort of status as a FTSE 100 company. There is some sort of rumblings of discord on the board and things like that, and within shareholders, that could become more of an issue for Unilever as the year goes on, and could sort of scupper those plans to shift the base to Rotterdam. In terms of figures, I think analysts are expecting a 3.6% drop in turnover for the first quarter to 12.8 billion pounds, but with a 3.6% rise in underlying sales growth, excluding the spreads business, which is again a tad above the target set after the Kraft Heinz bid last year. In terms of our clients, I think they've been buying since it fell below the £40 mark. It's lost a bit of value since 2018 began. And this is why UBS gave it the buy rating at the end of March, saying that it's sort of a good entry point because it's lost a fair amount of value. I guess even if you go back in towards the end of 2017 in the last 6-7 months or so.
Yeah. And do you know what? I, for one, will not be investing because they're leaving Britain. That's it. Full stop. Why should I give them their money for taking away money from us? But anyway, ULVR is the ticker there. And Connor, thanks for that. And we'll chat next week.
Thanks very much.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, Edenville Energy, EDL. At four, Harvest Minerals, HMI. At three, Coro Energy, CORO. At two, Chariot Oil and Gas, CHAR. And number one most followed company is a company I wrote a blog on the weekend and sent it out. By all means, join my email newsletter list if you want to. But it's C4X Discovery Holdings, C4XD. Very exciting company. Worth doing some research on. If you go on the page on, just go to the blog section, actually, voxmarkets.co.uk/blog, then you will see the blog there. And I tell you what, my wife and kids are away at the moment, so I had plenty of time to write it. Okay, time for the top five most liked RNSs. They are as follows. At five, there's six companies. This is a joint five. So at five, Feedback, new company structure and directorate change. That's FDBK. I like what the new CEO is doing there. At five also, Frontera Resources, FR, statement, media speculation. At four, Metal Tiger, Botswana Copper Silver Project, EMP submitted for drilling T20 dome. At 3, Echo Energy, final results. At 2, graphene supply to major tyre producer, which I talked about with Neil earlier on. And number 1 is from Asia Met Resources, and they intersect high-grade mineralization at Butong. Oh, yeah, that's their big, big, big deposit there, or asset, or resource. And they started drilling that, and it's looking good from the first set of drill results. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.